Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Perspective, a show where we tackle paranormal and supernatural claims, belief in aliens, conspiracy theories, and pretty much anything you want to bring to us. The number is at the bottom of the screen, 951-364-2430. And your hosts for the evening are Secular Rarity and Genevieve. How are you both doing?
Doing great. How are you doing, Nathan?
I am doing well, thank you. This is, for those who don't know, this is Genevieve's first appearance. She got her start on TikTok and then now has a show with Dave Warnock called That GD Show, which airs every Monday at 6 p.m. Central Time.
Yeah, it's been super crazy. I'm just excited that I get to talk to so many interesting people. And I'm so excited to be here tonight because I grew up on X-Files and I would like to listen to some of y'all out there.
The theme of the show, the soundtrack is pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's almost like X-Files-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. But
All right, we have a bunch of calls. So I'm going to bring your first caller up, then I'm going to jump off screen. We have an actual paranormal investigator coming on, which I'm really excited about. So your first caller is going to be Dr. Brittany. Brittany, you are on with Secular Rarity and Genevieve. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, great to hear from you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
What would you like to talk about today with us?
Just the paranormal in general.
Yeah, I'm curious, how did you get into paranormal investigation, and what does the day in the life of a paranormal investigator look like? If you want to give us just a little backstory.
It started when I was 8 years old, you know, typical. My mother was a single mother, moved into a new home, and that's when I started noticing I had abilities, and it just kind of grew from there, and I took a passion into a career, and I got my PhD in parapsychology in 2019.
Very cool. And so what does... What do you do on a daily basis, let's say? Like, give us kind of a quick bullet point understanding of that.
On a daily basis of a paranormal investigator, it isn't so much about going to the locations like you see so much on the big TV shows. There is a lot of history that goes into being a paranormal investigator. Definitely a lot of time, you know, really looking at the occurrences of the hauntings of the places that contact us, not so much the backstory, just some of the things that people say. So you do kind of go into these locations with an open mind and not a preconceived notion of a haunting that's happened there, because you always don't want to go into a location and automatically assume, oh yes, this is what they heard, so I'm hearing it too. Sure. But you do have to take a lot more time into finding places that are supposedly haunted, or if people call us and saying their homes are haunted, you have to do a lot of counseling with them before we actually take the time to go to those locations of the people's homes. So it's not wasting our time and not wasting theirs.
Yeah. So how do you differentiate between what you would consider an authentic haunting and somebody who is just hearing things go bump in the night?
A lot of times it has to do with just one's own personal, you know, occurrences that are happening in their life. If there's a lot of trauma going on, a breakup, you know, things like that, that tends to lead into focusing then into the paranormal, because that's actually trying to give them, you know, hope that it's not them, if that makes sense in a way. So if somebody's, you know, had a trauma in their life and just lost a loved one, if, you know, clicks and clatters and, you know, lights flickering, things like that, that happen, they automatically want to assume it's that lost loved one. When, you know, we have to go in with an open mind and do a lot of debunking before we could claim that is actually paranormal activity happening.
Interesting. So just kind of jumping off of that, where do you fall on the spectrum of belief? Do you say, yes, I think ghosts are real. I think supernatural elements exist in this world. Where do you kind of fall on that?
I truly believe in the paranormal and spirits, but we also take a scientific approach to it because you have to have both a spirituality in this field and scientific evidence, because it has to go along with one's own personal feelings. There are many times where I've gone to locations having clear cognizance, which just means clear knowing, but I have to also back that up with scientific approach for the credibility of that.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because something that's really sort of the pillar of what makes something scientific is falsifiability. So how would you go about, falsifying what you genuinely believe to be encounters with ghosts or spirits? Just kind of walk me through a little bit in more detail what that scientific approach really looks like.
We'll just take, we had a couple call us that said, their house was haunted. We took a lot of notes. We spoke to them several few times. We felt like it would be time for us to go to their location, and we did, and to find out that it was short circuits in their electrical panel outside, that it took us time to use our equipment to go through all of the sockets in the house, and to find out it was something so simple where we took the time to figure that out for them, which it worked on both of our ends, because they felt safer that it wasn't a spirit haunting them. And we felt better that we were actually giving them, proof that the house is not haunted, that it is okay. And then sharing with the public that not all occurrences are paranormal activity. Mm. 90% of the time right now in this field, everybody says it's haunted. Everybody says, it's demons and spirits. When if we just stop and take a logical approach to it, I believe the field will get more credibility in the future. Hmm.
Well, let me jump in real quick, Dr. Brittany, and just say that I definitely appreciate that approach that you're taking. And I really like the fact that, you were so willing to just give us, a number on it and say, like, look, 9 out of 10 times we go looking at this stuff and we find it's short circuiting, there's a rat nest in the wall or something, just that kind of mundane stuff that happens to all of us. I think that's awesome. What is there go ahead.
Oh, and it's also a lot of times one's own psychokinesis that is creating these occurrences. Mm. And I'm actually back in school to do some counseling, so that way I could also help them with that. So it's a win-win for both people. I'm helping somebody and detouring what it is and making it what it is and helping them resolve those issues. And it's also helping me to, share that it's not always paranormal.
So what you said, like 90% of the time, it's, that old wiring or that leaky faucet or, whatever the heck that is, right? Do you have maybe a quick encounter that you've done where it's part of that 10% where you're like, hey, this really seems like it's the supernatural, it's the paranormal?
Yeah, I have many different occurrences, but one that really stands out to me is we're actually going back to this location in Estero, Florida. It's Corsham State Park. It used to be a settlement from Dr. Cyrus Teed, who created this commune back in the 1900s. And we captured so much activity there the first time. For one, I was sitting on a bench, and clear as day, we captured it in 90% of our recordings. Somebody said, my chair, and then the chair started shaking. And that takes a lot of energy from a spirit to manifest itself to actually make that happen. So that was probably one of the most intense things that's happened, because like I said, it does take a lot of energy for a spirit to manifest himself to make that happen.
What? So you said you were sitting in a chair and the recording captured my chair kind of in a, you know, funky, weird voice. And then your chair started shaking. Do you have any video footage or maybe in the audio recordings? We can, you know, definitely tell that your chair was just like shaking like crazy.
It wasn't shaking like crazy.
Okay.
But we do. It is on our YouTube channel.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm very, very curious to see that. And then also, I'm glad that you're going back to school for some counseling, because I'm sure that your job is a lot like a bartender's job, where you're sort of an unofficial therapist, because I'm sure that it's a definitely traumatic to go through believing that you're being haunted. I guess I'm wondering, you know, you say that it takes a lot of energy for a spirit to do something like this. How do you go about learning about specifically like what type of energy it takes for a spirit to do X, Y, or Z, or that it even is a spirit?
Finish.
No, that was the question. Just how do you?
Well, we're all energy. We're all made up of energy, and I believe when we are in me and my partner, when we are in these locations, I constantly keep saying, use our energy. If you put out that energy. And if you're trying so hard to communicate with somebody in a positive way, they are going to feed off of your energy, which will also help them manifest their own. And if the spirit is there, obviously their energy is already stronger, because that's what we are. We're all energy. Even when we pass, we're energy.
So that leads me to ask a question here, just for clarification. I wonder if Genevieve and our audience are also thinking this as well. You're saying the word energy. And when I think of energy, a lot of times I go to this, you know, potential, kinetic, you know, electricity, you know, just kind of the normal stuff. I'm just a layman idiot, you know. I'm nobody important with no degrees or anything. But when you're saying energy, what are you defining that as? And how would we know?
In a way, you will know if a spirit is there. I'm sure you've heard many claims of, oh, you know, your hair stands up, you know, ooh, it's cold. When a spirit is there, like I said, I have clear cognizance, which means just clear knowing. So I do tend to know things more than a normal human. But the feeling of a spirit trying to communicate you is something that it's so hard to explain. But just imagine Halloween cobwebs with electricity coming over you, like a tangled web of energy, of static electricity.
Is it possible to get that feeling? Which, by the way, I'll just admit that was I really enjoyed that analogy, just the cobwebs of electricity. That was just a really cool mental image for me. But is it possible that human beings get that kind of feeling in another manner, and it's not ghosts?
Of course, anything's possible.
How would you tell the difference then between those two instances?
You will know.
Hmm.
And I tell that to people, you will know when somebody is there that you cannot physically see.
Hmm. But you're saying it, let me just kind of shout back to you. It kind of sounds like what you're saying is that there is a difference. Like I went to a really cool concert years ago, and I was like so close to the front row, and this was like a really, really cool band. And, you know, I don't know if the guy actually like pointed at me, but I felt like he pointed at me and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. You're like one of the best ever, man. You're saying that feeling of the electric cobwebs that I was getting there and the feeling of the electric cobwebs that I would get with a spirit, as you've called it, those are noticeably different feelings. Am I understanding you on that?
Yes, completely different.
What's that difference? What does that look like? Do I get tingling in my toes as opposed to my fingertips? What's that difference?
It's a different kind of endorphin that your body is feeling. Because I've felt both, believe me, being a music lover and a paranormal investigator. It is one of those feelings that it is so hard, like I said, to describe, but you will know the difference.
Okay. And when you say like different endorphins, endorphins for me, again, I'm just some layman, but endorphins for me, when I think of that term, I think of, you know, chemicals, say, that our brain kind of puts together. And we know those chemicals. We're pretty knowledgeable on those guys. I think we might even be able to put them in test tubes and stuff. Have we done that? Have we found other endorphins maybe that are outside of the ones that we already know about that would give us credence to believe that it's a different feeling, it's a different reaction? Does that make sense?
Science. It does. Scientifically, I don't know if we've done that yet. I just use that in my analogy because it's an adrenaline rush. Mm. I will also say, for one instance, we were in Indiana at a old infirmary, and having the feeling of somebody rush up and whisper in your ear without them being there automatically put me in tears. Not so much of fear, but of this is really happening and that person is not there, yet they're trying to communicate with me.
Hmm.
So it put me in a different state, to where it was excitement, fear, every emotion you could feel at one time.
Interesting.
So your body will know.
Interesting. Yeah. For me, again, I want to kind of point back to what I said earlier, where I really do value the fact that you're very much going into these situations in a manner that seems, you know, careful and seems cautious. And you're willing to, you know, to just right up front admit, hey, look, so many of these times we don't have anything whatsoever. In fact, we have stuff on the opposite side that tells us other things it is, right? I guess for me, the sticking point is I don't know that I'm convinced that last 10% is something we should put in a different category. It sounds to me almost as if what's going on here is some of those crazy, wacky things that happen to all of us in this wonderful world, you know, and we just don't have a clear cut answer. And I guess for me, it's very valuable, I think, that we continue to investigate this type of stuff. But I want to know, you know, what do you think if we could get like some hardcore, solid, check the box, no questioning proof of it? What do you think that would look like for those 10% of times where it is the supernatural?
Well, we've captured videos, EVPs, and that's why I'm trying our hardest in the scientific aspect to document it scientifically, to have 100% credibility, because science is credible.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, it sounded like earlier you have a YouTube channel where you've got some of this really cool stuff on. And before we let you go and we hop on to some other callers, which Dr. Brittany, thank you so much for calling us. And please, you know, call us back. This awesome show happens same time, same place every week. So it's a really fun time and we love having these conversations. But before we let you go, you know, give us shout out that YouTube channel, and I'm going to throw it over to Genevieve if she has any thoughts or anything, but shout us that YouTube channel and we'll let Genevieve wrap us up.
Yeah. I mean,
awesome. Check us out. Sarasota Paranormal, Facebook, Sarasota Paranormal Investigative Science. You could also check out our website, spisparanormal.com.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for calling in. This is fascinating, and I would definitely encourage you to call back because just like Secular Rarity said, it happens same time every week. We would love to hear more from you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
thanks
you too.
So much, Dr. Take Brittany. Care. All right. Before we do a little post-analysis, John Kennel, thank you so much for the $9.99 Super Chat. We always appreciate that. What'd you think, Genevieve? What'd you think about that?
You know, I really appreciate, just like you'd mentioned, I really appreciate the approach that she is taking, because it does sound like she understands 9 times out of 10. Yeah, your house isn't actually haunted. Sometimes it's a circuit breaker, but I guess I just wonder, you know, what would it take for her to question, what if I'm mistaken about that other 10%?
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
I remember there was a time I used to live on this 3,000-acre farm in rural North Carolina. It has these ruins from an old church. It, you know, the manor house that was there had been there for 100 years. And there was actually like some unmarked graves and like a little graveyard that was by this lake that I used to hang out at all the time. And I remember laying there one day and I felt, you know, the back of my neck, all of that hair stood up. I heard what was like a woman's scream and this like wind rush over the water. And I, you know, I'm a very, you know, skeptical person, but I was like, yo, what the fuck was that? And then it's interesting because, and it's creepy too, because a lot of the graves are from children that died like in the late 1800s. And then I just looked up like the local high school game schedule and it was just the muffled loudspeaker from like 2 miles away. So, you know, there are no circuit breakers there to check, but you know, if you look, I think there's always going to be some sort of evidence that you might just not have found.
Yeah. And I forget this scientist's name, but there's a story about a scientist who he got a new lab and he went to go investigate some stuff and do some of that crazy science. And he started noticing after like 2 or 3 days of being in this new lab, he had this horrible, horrible feeling. He just always felt so tense and angry, and he was just sad, and he just didn't know what the heck was going on. And so he stopped his one experiment and started trying to figure out why he was feeling like that. And he came to find out there was a weird fan in the back of the lab that was running at such a frequency that he couldn't hear it audibly, but the sound waves were still coming into his eardrum and affecting him and causing him to feel nauseous. The moment he turned that fan off, much better. And it's those types of instances, you know, that I think we got to be more careful, and we just have to be willing to throw our hands up and say, hey, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you ready? You want to take another call?
Yeah, let's do it. That first one was super fun.
I thought so too. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely great. Let's talk with Priscilla. Priscilla has an interesting story. Priscilla, you are on with Genevieve and Secular Rarity. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, doing great over here. What do you want to talk about?
I would say my biggest thing is spirit is real. And the way I look at it is everything around us is made of energy, including us. And when your physical body doesn't hold that energy is going to go somewhere. And that's what I would consider like your spirit. I am a person that's like very connected with the universe, like with grounding myself, crystals, communicating with spirit is a big thing for me. And I do have, my son, when he was younger, he was very, very, sensitive to spirit. And for instance, in his bedroom, we're hunters. So we had a buck mount, like just the head. No, it wasn't a full head mount. It was just like the horns with the skull. And that was hung on his wall, and it was there for years. My dad's a construction worker. Like, he had it in the walls in a stud, like with all the little extra gadgets that help keep stuff mounted and everything. And when my son was about three, he was always talking with somebody or people. And like, I could sense some things going on. And at that time in my life, I was very closed off to spirit because I would get super scared. So I'd always keep myself closed off. So like, I had a feeling, but I didn't know for sure. And he was terrified to sleep in his room. There's just something about his room. He could not sleep in there, even if I slept in there with him. And one day he was actually playing in his room. He was about 3 years old, and he came running out. He was crying, "Mommy, mommy, there's monsters in my room, monsters in my room." And I'm like, "What are you talking about, sweetie?" And at that moment, when he ran into the kitchen to tell me that, I heard a huge bang in his room. And I ran in his room, and that buck mount, the skull, was right over where he was playing. So if he didn't run out in that instant to tell me there's monsters in his room, that would have fell right on top of him.
Sure.
Can I jump in for a second?
So after that, that's when I went in. What was that?
I just wanted to jump in for a second, Priscilla, because it sounds like there's already a lot of really, really good stuff that we could kind of talk about. And if hopefully the audience and Genevieve will you know, walk with me through this for a second, because I'm going to ask a question I think a lot of people have heard very recently, which is, you mentioned spirit being a real thing. You say you definitely believe in spirit, and your definition for that sounded to me like it was when your physical body can't contain the energy. And I guess my question is, does that mean that you think energy is non-physical?
Not that it's non-physical, because when I think of like our soul is where energy, like how I would consider our energy from. And when I mean like the physical body and then energy being not physical, it's like, that's like a really hard line, because I don't know how to explain it. So sometimes when people see spirit, they're not seeing like a physical form of a person that you would think you would see, because it is just their energy. And it's just like a glowing orb. What would it would look like to you, like face to face, like a glowing orb. And because you're seeing that person's energy, that soul. Does that kind of make sense?
Kind of. I definitely have some more questions, but I want Genevieve to jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds kind of like what you're talking about is an aura, but I love talking about the concept of souls with people. You know, because a soul is something that is prevalent in a lot of religious mythology. But I'm curious if you could define specifically what is a soul, where does it reside? Yeah. What is it, you know, in tune with your consciousness? Is it what just generally makes you who you are? Like what, when you talk about a soul and energy in the context of the human experience, could you be just like a little bit more specific?
So I guess I would, how I would explain it is that, yeah, pretty much like your soul is connected pretty much with everything. Your soul is, you know, kind of like what makes you, you. That's it's hard to like get it into words.
Yeah.
It's a big
question.
You
know question. What I mean? So yeah. For me, it is. It's a part of your consciousness. It's a part of, just your existence, to me. And I couldn't tell you that it like resides somewhere specific, like, or anything like that. I think it just your soul. I believe that, when you're born, you have lessons to learn. Like there's a life path for you and your soul is choosing that life path for lessons that needs to be learned.
Interesting.
How
would you,
I don't really know how else.
That's okay.
How would I what?
So how would you determine? Cause that, I think that thing that you just said there was really interesting. Your conception is kind of the soul being this decision maker for your life, basically. And I guess what comes to my mind right away is, how would we be able to distinguish that? How would we be able to show, like, yes, this is not, say, your physical body making these choices, but that energy, that kind of other stuff making those choices?
Well, I definitely think when you're in a physical body, that like your brain will affect decisions you make. Obviously, we're human in a physical body, and so that plays a factor in it. And that's why I believe that sometimes you go through kind of like the same life path, and you can do it multiple times because when you were in said physical body, didn't learn the certain lessons that you needed to learn, that your soul needed to learn, if that kind of makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
And as like being able to definitively know, that's hard because I can't say, well, this right here or that right there, like nothing 100%.
Yeah. Do you,
And I guess it's like when you're like the person themselves would have to be like, first, you have to believe, it takes work. It takes dedication for some people to want to sit down and really start connecting with being able to connect with themselves, to know and to learn the difference of something that's spirit or not.
Yeah. I'll ask one last question. Do you think there's a chance, not saying it's happening, but do you think there's a chance that you're going into this already kind of accepting the conclusion? Already kind of saying to yourself, well, I'm gonna find a red tennis ball, you know? And then making the answer that you get kind of fit that conclusion. Do you think there's any chance that that's happening, or 100% you hit the nail on the head?
I really don't think. Yeah, no, not at all. I, like, for me personally, like, I remember as a child being sensitive to spirit. And then when my grandma passed away when I was like 14, I completely closed off from spirit because I was looking for a sign. So like when I, around 14, I was looking for that red tennis ball. I went into life like every day looking for that red tennis ball. I wanted a sign for my nana, and I would not get it. I wouldn't get it. I didn't have any communication with spirit. I didn't even get like a flicker of the TV that would make you, like just a normal person think like, oh, maybe that spirit communicating with me. I would get nothing because I was going in looking for a red tennis ball. And I actually set up an appointment with a medium. And that was when I was about 19, so about 10 years ago. Oh, I'm totally lying to you. It was about 6 years ago that I went to see a medium. And that's when my perspective and my consciousness of spirits started to change. It took me about, I would say, for the last like year and a half, 2 years, I really started opening up and not going in looking for a red tennis ball. Going in with a complete open mind, connecting with the universe, grounding myself, meditating, and really started to open up spirit again. And it makes a world of a difference not going in looking for a red tennis ball.
Sure. I agree. Genevieve, what are you thinking?
I guess I'm curious, I don't want to take too much time with this, but I'm wondering if you can just sort of detail your experience with that medium. Like, what was it that they did or that they said that really sort of changed your perspective on what might possibly be out there? Because that's a pretty powerful shift to go from I'm not looking for a red tennis ball to, you know, it seems like that was like a really pivotal moment in your shift in beliefs about these sorts of things.
Yeah, so I guess it wasn't really my beliefs. It was really me being scared. I was scared of spirit. If I would see, like all the time, I would see something like out of the corner of my eye and I would get super spooked. I would just always be nervous. I wouldn't want to communicate with anything like that and just close myself off. And when I went and met with her, the first thing that she talked about was my cat that had passed away. And she told me how my cat died because I really thought my dad killed my cat. It was a long story. And she validated my cat, Gucci. And right there, I was like, okay, this is a little bizarre. I mean, I knew animals, like your animals, their spirits can reach out to you. I just never expected it. And then she went on, she validated a couple things about my grandma that I really needed to hear from. And then she just kind of, it was like, she kept asking me questions. She's like, you're telling me you've never called anybody and just told them something that you didn't know or like they didn't tell you. You've never just been sitting at a table and just like went up to a stranger and said something. And I was, no. And she's like, your energy is so powerful. You need to allow yourself to open up. She's like, you don't need to be here. And you know, deep down, you don't need to be here because you can do this by yourself. And that's how she explained it to me is I was so closed off. I went in so zoned in trying to find that red tennis ball that I was just shut down. So she sat there with me. She gave me some techniques. And then that's when couple of years after that, because I was still kind of nervous, I started to open up. That's when I started to, because I did, like she was right. When she said deep down, you know, you don't have to be here. I knew that. And she was validating everything I have felt. And that really made me realize that I just need to open up and I just need to start connecting with the universe and opening up my mind and soul to spirit again.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I will say it's interesting as well because your experience with your medium reminds me a lot of when I first talked to a therapist after losing my father. Because everything that you're doing, I mean, you sound, you know, really grounded and like in a really good place in your life and really comfortable. And, you know, I can attest to, you know, the power that meditation can have for that. And for for seeking out connections with other people and you know, feeling and understanding that we are part of this bigger ecosystem and we are all in this journey of life together. I mean, I think for anybody, that is a really positive direction and perspective to take in your life. I guess I'm just wondering where this supernatural element of it comes through. Like, where do we go from these tried and true traditions that work, you know, grounding, meditation, introspection, slowing down, connection with others? How do you tell the difference between just the positive benefits that we scientifically know from doing that and doing that and then experiencing spirits as a result?
Yeah. And Priscilla, I just want to say,
it's an insane feeling.
You said it's the same
Go
feeling?
Ahead.
No, that's okay. You said it was the same.
It's an insane feeling.
Insane.
Like insane.
Insane. It's, okay. Okay.
It's like indescribable.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's how you know when you are communicating with spirit, because it feels like you're in basically like another world.
Could I give you a little homework, Priscilla? Is that okay? Is that okay if I give you a little take homework?
Sure.
So just to remind everybody, every 7 p.m. on this fantastic channel you're watching right now, this wonderful show comes on. It's not always the amazing Genevieve and myself, but other great people. And we're going to let you go here in a second, Priscilla, because we've got a couple of other, you know, wonderful callers just like you and our first caller today. But I think what might be some good homework, if you don't mind and you want to come back and chat with us again, I think Genevieve's question there was just really, really spot on. I mean, circled the crap out of that with red marker and put some stars next to it. Do you think maybe over the next next 6 or 7 days, you could try to sit down with yourself and see if you could come up with, you know, maybe some characteristics of the two different experiences and maybe give us a call back and see what you've come up with?
Yeah, I think that would be great. I think that would work really well, and I can write stuff down because I will forget so much, but I definitely will, and it will be a lot more clear to get through to the point.
Hey, you did great, Priscilla.
100%. You're amazing. And also, journaling is another great practice
that's
that is
right.
backed by science. So
that's
definitely
right.
journal.
It
right
is. I journal a lot.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a call and hanging out with us. And we look forward to hearing from you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to you next week.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we have got 2 good calls under our belt already. And I am looking at this queue. It is loaded up with people. I am so excited for that. Before we move further, let me just remind everybody out there watching right now or in the future, what are you doing? Did you hit the like button already, guys? It's so simple. You just, it looks like a thumb. It's underneath. Hit the button, subscribe to this awesome show, share it with your friends. And if you don't follow Genevieve already and you're not watching that GD show, again, what are you doing? Go do it already. It is a freaking awesome show.
I'm biased, but it's totally
that's
you
okay.
Definitely
I'm
check
a,
it out.
I'm a little biased too, I guess.
Yeah.
But so we have a theist that is here to talk with us, Genevieve. I am ready to talk about God. And we've got Sam on the line with us. Sam, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. How are you doing?
Good. Life is good. God is good.
Yeah, so tell
us. I've been enjoying listening to the other callers.
Good.
Sounds like y'all have a really good time on the show.
Oh, thanks. It's mostly Genevieve. I just kind of ride the coattails. So
No.
what do you want to talk about today with us, brother? It sounds like you kind of want to tell us why you believe in God.
Yes. And there's 2 different aspects of it. One side is like why I believe, and that's a subjective experience. So I wouldn't expect it to count as proof for anyone, but it would be why I believe. And then the other side of it is I could explain like why I think other people should believe. which would count more as like, you know, an apologetic argument.
Let's take that side of it, so if you don't mind, Sam, because I think there's a lot of us here, including Genevieve and myself, that, you know, if there is something out there that should convince us of this, we want to hear it. So
1,000%.
What is it, man? What you got for us? Well, we're ready.
I don't know if I can convince anyone, but basically what it is the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. And the gospel of Christ is true because of the impossibility of the contrary, meaning God is the necessary precondition for, you know, human epistemology. Like if we were like in a naturalistic universe where everything was just mechanical cause and effect, you know, every single thought that we think, it's just matter in motion. It's just chemicals, physics and chemistry following, you know, like a domino chain effect following mathematical laws. There would be no reason to think that our brain thoughts have anything to do with, you know, corresponding to objective truth. Basically, unless there is a God who knows everything and who created humans and given them the ability to have knowledge, do you know you're not in the matrix?
Can I jump in real quick, Sam?
How do you know what?
Is it all right if I jump in? Yeah, because I think we might have already gotten, and I'm a big fan of this. I love to shout back to people and see if I'm on the same page. And you just tell me if I'm not even reading the right book here, man. It kind of sounds similar to maybe like that Aristotelian prime mover thing, or that like necessary being for the grounding of all existence. Is that kind of where you're going?
Yeah. Yes. I'm aiming more at human epistemology. Like without God, then all we're left with is nihilism and solipsism. Because how do you know you're not in the matrix? Or if we live in a totally random universe, how do you know your thoughts are not random? Or if we live in a mechanical Newtonian universe,
Sam, let me hop in.
How do you know your thoughts are not just... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. You know, how do I know I'm not in the matrix? How do you know you're not in the matrix? What did you do to demonstrate
because
that?
There's basically two options: God or just absurdity. You can't know anything. And what connects
that
the gospel
sounds,
is
Sam,
the gospel of Christ.
Let me just shout back at you real quick, man, because that kind of sounds like to me what you presented us with is something generally known as a false dichotomy, where you said it's either red or it's blue. But in reality, right, there's a whole bunch of other colors. It doesn't have to just be red or blue, right? It could be orange or purple or anything other than those colors, right? So what if there really is a dichotomy here, it would have to be either God or not God. And not God can be anything, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I like the way you put it.
Yeah.
God or not God.
Yeah.
And when I speak God, I'm talking more than just general theism. I'm speaking specifically the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, because that's the other side of the coin, where the gospel of Christ connects this for me, where the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. You know, when I was 18 years old, I'm 37 now, but when I was 18 years old, I was atheist. I was at university, and, you know, I began having these thoughts about, you know, fearing death and judgment, and it was totally random because I was like, I'm an atheist. Why am I thinking about these things? And when someone presented to me the gospel of Christ, that, you know, I had sinned against a holy and righteous God, I deserve his judgment, but Jesus died and rose again to save me, that Jesus is the Son of God, God incarnate, who died on the cross for my sins, rose from the dead for my justification by putting his faith in me. He makes me spiritually alive. He reconciles me to God, and I'm born again. And that, it's like, how do you know this power? Flip the switch and see if the lights come on.
Sam,
and that's what
just
I did.
A second.
and the lights came off.
I do. I apologize. I do just want to just cut in for a second because I'm very curious. You said that you were 18, 19 years old when this happened, when you felt this
18.
Feeling. Yeah, you're 18 years old. You're an atheist, and you started feeling. Sounds like a lot of negative feelings about judgment and guilt.
Yes, it was so weird because I began to be aware of my own mortality.
Sam, can you hear me?
Yeah. There's a second part to that question.
All right, brother. Just hang on a second.
I love how excited you are. I'm excited that you called and we can talk about this. I guess I'm wondering, what was there anything that was happening? Was there anything that you did in those years leading up to that made you that you could say you felt bad about? You know, because I ask this because as you know, a lifelong atheist myself, there's plenty of situations where I've woken up just feeling horrible about myself, and it usually was because I had done something that I felt really guilty about. It was an internal feeling. I'm wondering how you felt that this judgment was bizarre that you felt these things.
I really appreciate that question. Because it was no one thing in particular. There I was at university, and I began being aware of my own mortality, and I began thinking, you know, if I do die, what if there is a judgment? And I tried to console myself with two things. I tried to console myself with, well, I don't believe in that stuff anyway. And for some reason, that didn't work. And the second thing I tried to console myself with goes back to your question. I was like, but I'm a good person. I never broke the law. I never hurt anyone. Just a kid, you know, I'm just living my life, you know, I finally left home and I'm living in this dorm room and it's so exciting that I'm in college now. You know, I just try to think like, why would someone like me be under judgment? But I couldn't shake the feeling that if there is like a standard that God has, that even though I'm not a bad person, I still fall short of that standard and would still be under God's judgment.
Yeah.
And then when I was presented with the gospel of Christ, where Jesus is shown to be this perfect man, he's God incarnate, but he's perfect man. He made that standard. He lived a life that was even more perfect than anything anyone could live. Mm-hmm. And by putting your trust in him, he imputes to you that perfection.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. It sounds like, and you touched on this just very briefly, it sounds like the catalyst for this wasn't even necessarily those guilty feelings you were have, but more sort of that existential question about, you know, this fear of death and what might happen. Would you say that that's accurate?
Fair to say. Yeah.
That almost, you know, reminds me of Pascal's wager. Of, you know, it's better to believe even if you're wrong, because if you believe and you're right, then you go to heaven. But, you know, if you believe and you're wrong, nothing happens. However, if you don't believe, you could be tormented.
Pascal's wager only works if there's only like one religion, though.
Exactly. So, you know what I mean? Like... Yeah, for sure. and that's, you brought up one of my biggest arguments against it. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, which you still have decided that it is Jesus Christ who is your Lord and Savior. How did you settle on Jesus versus the thousands of other gods that are out there?
Yeah.
Oh, there's millions. There's millions to choose from. Because, well, to put it frankly, Jesus worked. Like, I'm going to tell just an analogy. Like, let's say I forgot to pay my electric bill and then I got my power shut off. And let's say I just can't pay my electric bill. And I'm like, bummer, man. I don't have my electric bill paid and I don't have lights in my house. And then let's say a friend of mine pays my electric bill for me. I mean, this didn't happen. I'm just telling an analogy story. But let's say a friend of mine pays the electric bill for me and he doesn't tell me, you know, because he just wants to do it under the radar, just something kind, so I don't feel bad about it. And then I get a letter from the electric company saying, hey, we've restored your power. The power's on again. And I'm like, the power's on again? Who paid the bill? How's the power on? How do I know that the power's back on in my house? What's the easiest way to find out if the power's on in my house? Turn the lights on. So I flip the switch and boom, the lights come on. I'm like, well, hey, there is power again in my house. And that's the thing. There was power in the gospel of Christ. I became spiritually alive. I know God and he works in my life. So that's how I can say, well, this worked. And then I can look to things like, you know, Bible prophecy, historical arguments for Jesus rising from the dead, you know, things like that, that serve as, you know, additional confirmations. But those things came after, you know, I put my faith in Jesus and realized he is real and he died on the cross for my sins. He rose from the dead. And when you put your trust in him, he makes you spiritually alive. Forgive
Sam,
your sin. And
let me hop in. Let me hop in again real quick.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Because I think some people out there might see a theme for tonight, which I think is a thread that runs through a lot of these conversations. And you know, I know I've already given somebody homework, but if you're up to it, Sam, I'd love to give you some too, brother. I love putting work on other people. I'm so lazy. Do you think maybe in the next 7 days, because just another shill moment, this wonderful show comes on every week, 7 p.m. Central, right here.
Yeah.
Do you think in the next week, because that story that you gave about the electricity and the light bill and so forth, I thought that was great, man. I love that. And for me, the issue with any time we're swapping out electric company and electricity for God and supernatural, the sticking point for me is that it feels like not only I don't have lights on at my house in that analogy, but it also feels like I don't even have a light switch or an electric company to kind of call or receive a letter from. And I guess over the next week, if you could for us, and whoever the wonderful hosts are next week, I know they'll love to talk about this too. We're all just a bunch of silly people that love these conversations. So do you think next 7 days, Sam, find us something like that letter from the electric company or the flipping the light switch on? Because I can flip that light switch on 100 times over, right? I can show that letter to somebody else. I can copy it and put it in a USB drive and all that stuff. Do you think you could come back with something like that for us, maybe?
Well, the letter would be the Bible. The Bible tells us about Christ and invites us to place our faith in him.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, I guess I'm wondering, you know, there's the Bible, of course, but then you also described your experience as you knew the lights turned on because when you flipped the switch, it was on. What was that moment? Like, what was it about the Bible that led you to testing that light switch to see if the lights were on?
And
does that make
sense? If you don't mind, Sam, if you don't mind,
your question makes a lot of sense. Go ahead.
So all I was going to say is, because we have a couple of other really wonderful calls we want to get to. And if you don't mind, just take that question and feel free. I mean, watch this back and really sit down and listen to that question and give us a call back next week. And whoever the heck is here, you know, just say, hey, this was my homework and this is what I've come up with. And I've got the light switch and I've got the lamp. You know, we would love that, man.
Hey, man, that sounds really cool. Awesome. I appreciate that. I'll do that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sam. Thanks, for giving us a call.
Yeah. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me and all that.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
All right. It looks like we have another wonderful super chat for $10 from John Fapiano. I hope I said that right, John. If I didn't, feel free to yell. I am excited. This has been awesome so far. I got to say, though, and I wonder if you come to the same place. So far, it seems like to me when we start to drill down on these specifics, we very quickly get to this nebulous, fuzzy, I don't really have a good understanding, but I accept the conclusion. Do you feel like that's kind of where we've been?
Oh, you know, absolutely. And that's not surprising because with all of these claims, you know, regardless of which religion or which alien or spirit or soul, you know, or bump in the night that you believe in, it always comes down to, well, you know it. When you do, you feel it. It's an internal feeling.
Yeah. And that leads to some problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because humans, we are fallible animals. We have amazing big brains with big imaginations. There's so many ways that our own thoughts can deceive us.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. Well, let's hear some more about some paranormal experiences. It looks like we have Andrea up in Wisconsin wants to chat with us about a paranormal experience. Let's see if we can get you on the line. Oh, it looks like my computer's just giving me a second. Hang on. Andrea, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you guys?
Good, good.
Yeah, having a great freaking time. We've already had some great calls, and we'd love to hear what you have for us. It seems like you want to tell us about a paranormal experience.
Yeah. So growing up, my grandparents owned this house. It was actually moved, as I got older, it was moved from one property to another. It was a really tiny house my grandparents built onto it. So part of the house was, I want to say right now it's over 100 years old. And the other half of it's probably over 50 years old. So growing up, right around the time my grandpa died, we kind of like said something like, oh, if you're here with us, flash a light on and off. All of a sudden, our kitchen lights over there started flashing on and off. Then later on, closer to my senior year of high school, that's when I noticed there was more paranormal activity in the house. This was right around the time my dad actually moved in to take care of my grandma. And there was one night, growing up, not thinking about it in high school, you're dumb, doing dumb things. We played a Ouija board. And so we believe we did not close the portal properly. So as time went on, my grandma passed away. At the time before she passed away, there was electricity networking in certain rooms in the house. And after my grandma passed away, all these lights just went on all by themselves. And then I moved back in with my dad, with my daughter, and we noticed, you know, some things, just like the ceiling fan moving by itself. And then my daughter had a toy that the switch was off. It was a Dora toy that she had, and it would just start talking by itself. So I couldn't really explain that situation. And then right before my dad, actually, no, what was it? My friend, he has like this sense or whatever. He could not be in my dad's basement at all. So when he's just like, I don't know. There's something wrong in your basement. So my dad was tearing up the kitchen floor in the house as he was remodeling the house. He was going to put it up for sale. He wanted to move out of state. He noticed there was a whole nother room in the basement. We thought it was a crawl space. Here it was a whole nother room in the basement. A bunch of old furniture from probably the 1920s.
Oh, wow.
And then my dad has a friend that is actually a paranormal investigator, psychic type deal. She actually came in and said she had this really bad feeling about something behind the wall, and that there was a portal right by that wall. And they believe from us playing the Ouija board, that's the portal that was left open.
Interesting. Let me say some things here.
Okay.
So one of the things that kind of jumps out to me is it sounds like what you're saying is, there's been kind of a handful of different experiences that you've had in your life. And I guess what I'm wondering is, before you had these experiences, did you already believe in supernatural stuff? Did you already think that the Ouija board would talk to ghosts, or did you already think that stuff was possible or happening, or?
Well, I was a little skeptical when I was younger until I started noticing like the whole light situation when I was in middle school, when my grandpa passed away. And I was like, well, that's kind of odd. Why would the light, you know, do that? But then like, as I got older and then I played the Ouija board, I mean, I already was a believer then. And then just like what happened when we played the Ouija board, which the light panels, like if you know, like the light panels that are in the schools, like the classrooms and stuff, that's sure. What my dad had in the house. Like my grandparents, when they had built the house, they put those light panels in. And then my dad took the house over when my grandma died. Mm-hmm. And then when there's like, not in between the big garage doors, there's a regular door and that flung open. So I was like, that's just odd how that happened. So, I mean, I'm like a big believer in that stuff now than versus back then.
Okay. Okay. Genevieve, any thoughts, any questions?
I mean, I don't want to make light of what you're discussing whatsoever. I did want to make just a quick homage to the fantastic paranormal investigator that we had calling earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. Did you check the electrical box?
That's a good point.
Yes, actually, my dad did. He was actually going to call an electrician to come over. They couldn't. Well, actually, yeah, he did, because I remember he told me he called the electrician to come over. Mm-hmm. They said they couldn't even understand why the lights weren't working in the house. And then just one night, it was, like I said, shortly after my grandma passed away, the lights that weren't working in certain rooms and this hallway all came on right when we were just all sitting there. Like it was just my dad, his friends, and me just sitting there, and all of them just came on.
Interesting. So
we can't explain that either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple of other calls, Andrea, but before we go, I want to ask you a question. If I could pull something out, like a nice document or a super cool video, or find some expert that could explain it real well, you know, and we could find that solid conclusion that 100% it's got to be this and nothing else, but it didn't confirm the paranormal for you. In fact, it kind of told you, hey, it's probably just that light switch, you know, it's probably just that, you know, fan right in the background. Would you want to know that?
I actually would be like, I mean, I guess, yeah, I'd be interested to know, like, what actually it could possibly be.
Yeah.
You know, it could maybe be something electrical. Maybe it is something paranormal. If my dad still stayed there, I'd like to, you know, obviously know more.
Sure. Well, I will tell you before we let you go, Andrea, again, thank you so much for calling us. We love it. There is a wonderful, wonderful Facebook page for this awesome show. I know you can find the link everywhere in the live chat and the description for this show. If you want, please come hang out with a bunch of us there and shout your questions out and tell your story. And, you know, maybe there's somebody there that has something that really does give a good answer and just kind of, you know, solves that mystery for you.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
All right, Genevieve, we've got just a handful of calls left, it looks like. But before we do that, we need to mention the Discord.
Yeah.
Guys, folks, we're doing an after show. Come hang out with us. Yeah. Ask some questions. Tell us we did a terrible job. I mean, whatever the heck it is, we're up for it. We've got thick skin, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, let's see what we have next for us. It looks like we have Kyle in Washington wants to talk about theists and atheists having some constructive conversations. Kyle, we're all for that here. So how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, hanging in there, having a great time.
So what are your thoughts, man? What do you want to tell us?
Well, I watch a lot of call-in shows that are similar to this, and I like the people that are on it, and I'm a theist. I don't agree with what they say, obviously, but I feel like a lot of the arguments and the debates get very heated these days, and, you know, it leads to a lot of hanging up and yelling over each other, and I just feel like theists and atheists aren't really communicating effectively to where each other's points can come across clearly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. That's sort of why I started making content in the first place, was that it seemed like there was a lot of name calling and you know, being snarky and not a lot of, you know, genuine respect for how much some of these beliefs that we disagree with can really mean to somebody. So, you know, I'm on your side there, Kyle.
Yeah, and just to kind of, you know, echo what both of you have said. I mean, I think there's value in our one-on-one spaces. You know, like Kyle, I wouldn't fault you if you were hanging around with a bunch of, you know, theists in the exact same vein as you, and you know, one of you guys cracks a joke about an atheist. I wouldn't blame you for that at all, right? Because we all need that personal space and that space where, you know, we're with the birds of a feather, so to speak, right? But I think when it comes time for this, like what we're doing here today, what Genevieve does on that GD show every Monday at 6 p.m., I think we take a second, right? And we should all really try to take that deep breath, take a step back, and come at these just a little bit more amicably, right? You still there?
Absolutely. I agree with 100%. But I don't know. I feel like I'm both ends of the spectrum. I don't like to critique theists that much. I can't really argue for everything that they say. But it seems to me that theists kind of have a bad name now, that it's very hard to, like, if you tell someone you're a theist, I feel like they automatically discredit everything about you as a person.
Are you, you're
you know
in,
what I mean?
And you're in the state of Washington?
Yes.
Come on down to my neck of the woods there, buddy. Down here in Tennessee, I promise you, you aren't at all looked sideways if somebody tells you. You know, I believe me, I absolutely cannot count the number of churches on my drive to and from work.
Mm-hmm.
So it could just be the, you know, the geographic area that you're in, man. But I will say, just to kind of, you know, dovetail a little bit there with what you said, I think it's very important that when those of us out there that want to have these constructive dialogues, on the non-belief side, on the atheist, the skeptic, you know, free thinker, whatever label that is, those of us that stand in our camp, I think we need to do our best to hold them accountable. If somebody's out there and somebody's, you know, just showing their ass and just really not at all engaging and you know, frankly, just being a jerk, right? We need to stand up and say, hey, look, you know, I don't think that's the best way to go about this. And I think that's something that everybody in all camps, you know, there's people that believe in ghosts and people that think the earth is flat and all kinds of stuff, man. And whether you believe in a God or not, we should be able to have civil dialogue with each other. And I'll say, you know, I'm not perfect. I know nobody else is. I know, believe me, I know I've gotten hot and I've said a lot of four-letter words right back to back. But I think in these moments, the Maya Angelou quote comes up for me. And I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but basically, you know, do the best you can with what you know. And when you know better, do better, right?
Absolutely.
Well, awesome, man. It sounds like with more people out there like you, believing or not, whatever stripe you believe in, and you know, with more people like myself and Genevieve and the wonderful producer of this show, Ethan Michael, we can start to work towards a place where the vast majority of these dialogues really, really are constructive and really are beneficial for everybody. You know, we've been chatting now for 5 minutes, Kyle, and you know, neither of us told the other one to go fuck themselves, and neither of us told the other one that they're going to hell. And you know, we're laughing and we're having a good time, but we're not laughing at each other's expense, right? Exactly. Well, Kyle, thank you so much. I know we're running
up. My ultimate justification.
Go ahead.
My ultimate justification. I mean, I can't really say I don't have a justification for what I believe. I have respect, but like, it kind of just starts with this video of this girl riding this cock.
Oh, fuck.
Like she was riding the cock. Like, look at this shit. She was getting fucking.
All right. Well, Genevieve.
Compelling argument at the end there.
I gotta say, you're muted, Ethan.
I dropped him. I muted him because it kept going into, I don't know how much you guys heard.
We heard a little bit, but that's okay. We can just move right on. I think all of us here and the vast majority of people watching are familiar, and we're just going to go back to having some good conversations to kill
Sweet.
It, right?
I'll get back.
I was really just trying to get Ethan to leave. I don't know if you could tell that. All right, look, we've got a few more calls. There's one here that looks so super duper interesting to me. It looks like we have somebody in Indiana, Tasha. It could be Tasha. I'm not sure. Please correct me. But it looks like Tasha wants to tell us about a paranormal experience with ghost pets. Can you hear us?
Yeah. Hi. And it is Tasha. You are right.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I have been a groomer for like about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And I used to groom at a veterinarian office right across from our euthanasia room. Mm-hmm. And we always had really weird stuff that would happen. We would hear like growling down the hall when like no one was down the hall. Like, you know, at closing time, there's like two people in the entire clinic, you know, and we'd hear growling from like across the clinic. There's no dogs on that side of the clinic. We'd have to do late night walks, and out of nowhere, like the dogs would start a howl, like right as we're getting them all tucked in. All the dogs would get set off, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, everybody's calm, collected, sleeping, and then, you know, hackles are raised, there's growling, snarling, somebody's upset. We'd had our dryers turn on. Again, nobody's like on that side of the clinic at all. There's like two people there. We generally had a rule that we didn't have one person there for that reason. but yeah, like we'd hear, like I said, our equipment would turn on, faucets would get turned on, and there'd be two people in the entire clinic on the opposite side.
So it sounds like it's not just, let's say, spirits of pets or ghosts, but there's this whole supernatural element thing that's going on. You've got lights going on, dryers going on, faucets going on. It's kind of all of this wrapped up together. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a really weird like place to work. And I didn't experience that with every vet or every boarding kennel I worked at. And I think that part of it is that we worked with the county. So working with the county, we got all the county strays. And unfortunately, not all those strays make it, you know? And so I think that kind of has a place to play sometimes where, you know, you get dogs that are naturally aggressive in life, don't really get a chance, not given, you know, physically hurt by humans, and things like that. And you go and put them to sleep, and that's just, you know, there's also, you know, a lot of owners that don't stay with their pet at end of life. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure if that's all what their world revolves around, I wouldn't want to be left alone, you know, the one person I want to see. So it leaves a lot of like really weird things happening.
Yeah. So it sounds like I'm just gonna make sure I clarify, and I'm gonna let Genevieve ask some questions. But it sounds like kind of what you're saying is you think maybe what was doing this, or kind of what was underpinning this, was the fact that there were a lot of animals that came through and maybe didn't really have a great life and didn't really have a great end to their life. And that maybe had something to do with why all this spooky stuff was going on. Am I kind of understanding that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I feel about things. You know, and it's pretty subjective, but I think that it's a way to look at things.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I can definitely see how if you believed that all of this was happening because of the spirits of these animals, it would make sense that perhaps you didn't experience this in other places because you didn't take in those same strays with the terrible lives. I guess I'm just wondering if that were true, if it really was that it was the spirits of these abused stray animals that were put down, you know, for behavioral issues and trauma. Don't you think that phenomenon would be happening in every animal control, in every town, in every city across the world, especially in you know, in countries where people don't have the same relationship with dogs? You know, in America, like my dogs, I have four, they are my babies. I will feed them better than I feed myself. Whereas in other countries, you know, they're street rats or they're food. Do you think that if it were the spirits of pets, don't you think that because there are so many dogs and cats around the world that this would be happening everywhere and this would be a documented thing that we could see across kill shelters all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, I do believe, like I said, it hadn't happened at other vets I worked at, but to note, some of the other vets I didn't work at really didn't do much with euthanasia. I know that working with other shelters and other rescue, because I have worked with other rescue and shelter as well, and there's definitely always, like, a weird air, and again, I don't know if it is just the internal feeling of, like, you know, you feel bad for these animals and what they've gone through. I don't know if that's just, you know, projecting. Like, I'm willing to definitely keep an open mind on that. But like you mentioned the wager earlier on the show, what does it hurt if we don't believe that? You know, if we live believing that we treat them right so that, you know, they get that, what does that hurt us? You know,
I think kind of
along those lines.
Yeah. I think real quick, and then again, I'm not even going to ask a question. I'll just shoot it back over to Genevieve because she's been crushing it this whole episode. Hey, like the video, everybody. Genevieve's been doing a fantastic job. But I guess what concerns me about that is when we accept things that we don't have good evidence for, even if there's this really nice motive behind it. I mean, I'm with you. I'm with you, Tasha. Like, please, people, treat your animals well. I mean, please, let's do this already. It's crazy that it's 2021 and we haven't figured this out yet. Like, of course a dog can feel pain. I mean, come on. But what concerns me about accepting the things is if we don't have really good evidence, if we don't have that demonstrable 1+1=2 type thing, it makes me concerned that we could lead down a path that ultimately gets us accepting other things that, whether intended or not, you know, maybe has bad consequences by itself or just doesn't necessarily do the thing that we wanted to do to begin with. But Genevieve, any other thoughts or questions?
You know, I mean, I think you're 100% spot on with that. I think you both are. I think that, you know, for you, it's important, of course, to take care of pets and be kind to all living creatures. I mean, like I said, I am a person with 4 dogs and 3 cats, and I'm vegan. Like, I can stand on this soapbox about how we should treat all living things well for eternity. And not because they'll experience any sort of eternal life or that they could haunt you, but just because it's the right thing to do. Everybody should, we should minimize suffering everywhere. But I think, you know, secular rarity just brought up exactly what I would ask, which is, you know, can you see how perhaps accepting beliefs without solid evidence could lead to accepting other beliefs without solid evidence? And can you see how that might become problematic, or examples of how that has already been problematic in our society?
Yeah, I do definitely understand that. And I do definitely like keep that in mind. And I try to stay pretty perspective, you know, pretty objective in things and in my beliefs. You know, and I'd like to also mention that this was earlier in my career, you know, and earlier in my young adulthood, where it was harder to stay objective. You know, we all know the difference between, you know, being 18, 19 and, you know, growing up a bit. But yeah, I mean, the reason that I always like really kind of believe that is, again, it was pretty isolated to one part of the clinic. And we got in a practice of like unplugging our equipment and it still turned on. So it's like that's, I think, you know, where it was like, okay, that's a little much for me. I'm just, you know, I'm just going to be over here on the other side of the clinic. Don't mind me.
Tasha,
that, you know, especially, like I said, I know some of the pets that did get put to sleep and under the circumstances they did. And it's like, you know, you weren't great living to deal with. I don't really want to deal with you, not if that's the case.
Sure. Sure. So. Well, Tasha, we're going to let you go. We're getting real close to the end here, but thank you so much for calling us and, you know, come hang out with us. There's a Facebook, there's a Discord, there's Twitter, there's all kinds of great stuff. And it you know, just a bunch of people just ready to listen and push back respectfully if we can. So.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much. You guys have a great night.
You too.
I think kind of what you said there, Genevieve, at the end was really great. And I think she kind of touched on it a little bit right there. You know, she said, I stay away from that part of the wing. And that, you know, that in and of itself, right? I want to treat animals well, and well, I just don't go to that one room. I mean, that's not terrible. That's not detrimental to society. What's the problem?
Yeah.
But where does it end, right? So first we, you know, we don't go to this part of the wing, and then next thing we know, we're unplugging all of our equipment, and then who knows where? And I think that's definitely something that a lot of us in this community, you know, we want to try to do our best to minimize that as much as possible, because again, it could get bad real quick and in ways you can't foresee, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there is no slope more slippery than a broken epistemology.
That is. Did you come up with that? I love that.
On the spot. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Look, if you haven't liked, subscribed, and shared this video already, like I just don't know what's going to do it at this point. I mean, come on. Come on, people. Well, we have one more caller, and we are going to take Kathy up in Wisconsin here in just a second. Dinick over in New York, give us a call back next week. We're sorry that we ran out of time, but we were just having some great conversations, and whoever's on next week or the week after or hanging out in the Facebook, I know they'll want to hear what you have to say, so definitely reach out to us. And just a reminder to everybody, right after this show ends, there is an awesome, awesome after show in the Discord. You get to hang out with us and ask some questions and, you know, who knows what? I don't know. Maybe we'll find some cool aliens in the Discord. Like,
oh, that'd be sick.
Well, let's hear Kathy up in Wisconsin. It sounds like you have an interesting personal paranormal experience you want to tell us about. How are you, Kathy?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Great.
Good. So yeah, I'm like, I guess everybody else, my experience is not in my home. I am not a person who like overly believe. I'm not overly religious. I took Hebrew scriptures in college. I am well versed on the Bible itself. So I'm very theological based when it comes to religion. But I have had a couple experiences in my life that make it very difficult for me to pretend that things that I can't see don't exist. One of that is just science-based. Matter is never, it's not created nor destroyed. So it's always just kind of pushed in one way or the other. So when you pass, it's got to go somewhere. So it's just that basic theory. It's got to go somewhere. One huge thing that happened to me that kind of just makes me believe that I'm not the only person inhabiting the space around me is when I was in high school, I was driving my job. And if you're from the Illinois Oak Forest area, there's a street called Central. It goes straight down and it crosses Bulmer in this really awkward location where it's almost, it's technically a straightaway, but you have to kind of like turn to the left to go straight. I took that path every day to work. I worked with my dad, and I was driving along the road, and my car radio changed abruptly to a different radio station, to an oldie that I did not have pre-programmed, that I could not find after this incident, because I did pull over to the side of the road because I was pretty spooked. And when it changed, it played a song, if you're familiar with some oldies, called Blueberry Hill. I immediately slammed on my brakes, because that was a song that my grandfather used to sing to me all the time when I was a kid, and I was like distressed. I slammed on my brakes, and when I did, an 18-wheeler went through the red light accidentally, honking its horn the entire time, saying like, I can't stop. So it took a lot of processing of that day until I was like well into my 20s. Of like, I went through the like, it was just coincidence. It was just a coincidence. It was really hard for me to think that it was just a coincidence. One, that song never plays on the radio. I could not find the station a second after that. It was the most wild experience. And then in college, I had a similar experience. I was having a really low point in my life in college, not doing well grade-wise. Got out of a really bad abusive relationship. I was at a McDonald's. With some friends, and I saw an old man kind of hobble in and order food, sit down. He reminded me of my grandfather. So when he was done eating, I went to grab his tray and I said, hey, I got it. Like, don't hobble over to the, I don't want to see you struggle. I'll grab it for you. I grabbed it from him. I turned around and he said, thanks, Cass. And I threw his trash away, and it took me a second to process. I turned around, and by the time I turned around, he was getting into like a Meals on Wheels car, and he looked right at me, and he did this like wink and like head grab with like his hat that my grandfather used to always do to me when he walked me to school. So those are like two instances that are like, for me, 100% yeah, undeniable. It's not like a creak in my house or anything
right,
like that.
Right. Can I hop in? Just, can I hop yeah, in, Kathy?
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
So are you familiar with the concept of a fish story, right? Where we catch a fish and then the next time we tell it, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Are you familiar with that concept?
Absolutely.
Cool. So I don't necessarily think that's what's happening here. What I wanted to bring up though was one of the reasons why some of these fish stories really stick with us is because our brain does this thing. Our brain really likes attention. Whenever you can just kind of go, hey, it's all about you right now, buddy. It just lights up the board. It loves that crap. That's why we see patterns everywhere, is because we kind of want this, you know, this crazy world to make sense to us and to be focused on us. And I guess what comes to mind to me is, it seems like both of these experiences were ones that were kind of traumatic or kind of important. Like, you know, you saw somebody that reminded you of your grandfather who had passed not long ago, and maybe with these experiences or that truck barreling through, it maybe that stuck a little bit harder in your brain, and then from there, we kind of elaborated on the rest of the telling. Does that make sense? Do you think that's a possibility, or am I just way off page here?
I definitely understand what you're saying. So I am an anthropology major and a psychology minor. I also have a almost complete minor in sociology. So I'm very familiar with a lot of the theories and probabilities of what you're talking about. That incident, the only person that I've really ever told, I've told three people, my mom, my dad, well, I guess now five, because I told you guys, sure, probably whoever's sure listening. my mom and my dad, the day it happened, so I was driving to work with my father. I told my cousin at my grandmother's grave. So my grandfather in that incident had passed with the truck incident, had passed 5 years before that. And the incident in college had passed 10 years before that. So I wouldn't associate it really with like the recent passing. My grandfather and I weren't actually super close. So I don't have any like, oh, you know, my wonderful grandfather who walked me to school every day. My grandfather was kind of a jerk. So it was always like wild for me to be like, why him?
Yeah.
Like that, like tiny memory of a child of him holding me and like being nice to me was probably like the only nice memory that I have of him.
Sure.
Which is why I'm like so wild that would be the only thing. Cause that's the only nice thing that I can think of. Cause even when he like would tip his hat and like kind of wink at me, it was always after he said something like being an absolute douche.
Sorry.
My grandfather was just a really giant Russian jerk. Russian Polak jerk. I do understand like a concept of fish stories. But that story has really, honestly and truly, never changed.
The
Blueberry Hill part.
If I can just jump back in, Kathy. I hate to cut you off. We are coming up to the end, and I think there's a lot of really cool stuff here that, again, hey, call back into the show next week and talk some more with some people. Just real quick to wrap this up, I think really what I was trying to get at is that when there are things out there that happen to us, you know, we're the narrator of our own story, right? We are the star of our own movie going on in our head, and everything about the world is directed at each one of us individually. And I think what happens with us a lot of times is when we see those things, whether they're real or not, we kind of take them on board and we hold on to them really, really strongly. And I guess for me, what I'm wondering is, how do we know for sure that isn't what's happening? And again, I'm so sorry that we're right at the end and we got to let you go, but I don't know if you've heard, there's a fantastic Facebook, a Twitter, a Discord after show. Please come hang out with us there and tell us some more, Kathy, or give us a call back next week. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Will do. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Genevieve, that was awesome. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. This has been a wonderful show.
Yeah.
You guys killed it. Seriously. Like, what? Never worked together before, and you just meshed really well.
That's just because we're both 9 out of 10s. So, yeah. I mean, that's just, it's a burden for us, but we handle it somehow.
It's so hard to go through life being so charismatic and silly.
That's right.
Woe is us, am I right?
Real quick, I'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Cindy Plaza, Left, Right, Left, Kenneth Leonard, Sky, Jump and Shoot, Oz, Secular Rarity, Philip Leach, Caitlin Beyond, Toast, Richard Gilliver, Sunset Sarge, Amit Matthew, Ray Sylvester, and Kyle Brewer. Thank you so much for your patronage. As you know, call-in shows do cost money, so consider becoming a patron for as low as $1 a month. Link is in the description. So Genevieve, what do you have going on?
Oh, gosh. I got a whole lot going on. I've got a TikTok where I make funny, silly, goofy TikToks about all sorts of things. You can just find it at Surprise Genevieve's TikTok. It's really easy to remember if you can spell my name. I also have a call-in show on YouTube of my own. As we said, it is That GD Show. It is every Monday at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central. And you'll find me popping up here and there all over the internet. I like to do these guest spots, so... You know, I can throw my link tree in the chat and stuff. It's got all the things.
If you could, Actually, yeah. Send me the link tree again so I can add it to the description of the video.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also totally going to be bothering you to come back, Genevieve, because this is awesome.
I will come back anytime you want to. In fact, we've got so many great people coming back next week. I wish I were free because I would do it.
Secular Rarity, do you have anything going on?
The good man Richard Gilliver has a show called Skeptic Hangout, I believe, and he and I recorded a video where we're talking about Mormonism. We did that a week or so ago, and I think he just posted it out there, so definitely go check that out. You can find me hanging out here in some other great places. Bug Ethan, y'all, post a comment and say, bring that Rarity guy back, or tell me I sucked. I'm really cool with either of them. So, but that's about it, man. So
sweet. Well, everyone, thank you for watching. Join us I'll put the link in the description again. Join us for the Discord after show, in just a few minutes. Good night, everyone.
SmackDown this argument a billion years ago, approximately. So
a billion years ago, approximately.
I'm sorry. I just want to get a little bit of a clip of Kenneth saying Euthyphro with his mouth full of chicken. That was beautiful.
I hate it. And it just keeps coming back again and again and again. And I don't understand why, if you're an apologist, if you're a person who reads Philippians, where it's like, whatever is true, think on these things. If you like, think of yourself as a person who takes the idea of truth seriously, like, please open google.com and just type in like defeaters to like the moral argument, and you're going to see all of them, and don't use it anymore.
Shannon, what do you have to say to that? Why is your argument dumber?
I'm sorry, Kenneth, but I would like you to explain to me what the ultimate foundation of anything that you have to say is. And how do you justify the ultimacy of any position that you could conceivably have as an atheist create the critique that you just levied against us? Like, what are your foundations for logic? Are your foundations for logic sound? I'm sorry. Was that annoying? Is that the worst? Is that the worst? Just wondering. That's my opening statement.
I
yeah, it's the worst, isn't it?